You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. We answer your questions about everything trucking. Trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone, give me a call. I'll do my best to get you an answer. Many times we'll get some help from the other listeners, and if you stump me, I promise I'll go find the answer if it exists. That's what we do here. So we, you know what I think we're going to do today? I think we're going to jump right into some phone calls and see how many we can get to. Let's get started in Indiana. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going? Welcome home.
Oh, it's so good to be home. I'll tell you, that was, you know, when I talk about knowing what it's like being on the road, I've been doing it for 30 years, but this year was a long trip, 4 months, a lot of things got a little sideways, so, you know, we got through it all, we learned a lot, and it's, but it is so good to be home this year.
Well, welcome home. I know you guys are back there eating all those strawberries, and I'm so jealous.
Oh, yeah. You know, the produce up here is just amazing. The berries are going to start, and we're right where we are. We're just surrounded by wild blackberries. So as soon as those hit later this year, I can go pick those. It fits in perfect with my new lifestyle.
Yep. So, Kevin, we haven't talked to you since we put our beloved USS Coast on the road, but things are going really well. I guess the first thing to tell you is that when we picked the truck up, the lifetime fuel mileage on it was 4.9, and now the lifetime fuel mileage is 7.26.
Wow, that is amazing. And you know, it still amazes me because I still hear from the Luddites all the time who say, oh, none of that stuff works and all that fuel mileage is snake oil. And my response to them is always, well, wait a minute. If we take your logic, that would mean that every truck on the road would have to get the exact same fuel economy. If nothing works, if nothing changes it, then every truck on the road would get the same fuel economy. We know that's not true. So things do work. It's just that there's a lot of junk on the market that doesn't work. There is a lot of scams and snake oil when it comes to fuel mileage. And I get that stuff sent to me every single day. We've spent the last 20 years figuring out what does work, and you're a great example. That didn't even take you very long.
Oh, no, and here's what we did. I mean, we didn't do that much. And, as you were saying that, I was thinking, you also can't neglect your truck. Because if you neglect your truck, it's not going to get any kind of fuel mileage. And that could be an issue, too. This truck had been neglected. I mean, it had so much stuff wrong with it. It was crazy. But it needed a new charge air cooler. And it needed a new clutch, and we went ahead and we put a life clutch on it. We put new tires all the way around. We put Michelin XCR 3 Plus on the drive, and we put on the steers, and we put Goodrich 454s on the drive, 22.5 Low Pros. We put aluminum wheels on the front. We put Centromatics on. And in Oregon, where we are, out there in the truck stop called Pioneer Village Couple. Yeah, Halsey. There's a shop that does MD alignment. So we were able to get the MD alignment done. We put on the EcoPure. And we found used APU, and we drove to, it was in Seattle, and so we drove up from the valley up to Seattle, and between, and it cost us $7,000 to buy the APU and get it installed. So, we're pretty happy. We had them replace the fuel lines and do all that stuff you say. But you know what, Kevin? I mean, just having the Let's Truck website and know what to do was so much help. But we got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
One is that if they said, oh, shit. Oh, sorry. This guy.
That's all right. It's satellite. We're okay.
This guy stopped in front of Zep. Okay, we're fine. heart palpitation. Okay, so anyway, they said the truck is supposed to have 350 rears, or 373 rears, but we don't think that's right. And when we're going 60 miles an hour, the TAC is at 13.5. What do you think we got?
60 miles, 22.5. Yeah, they're low pro 22.5s, right?
Right.
60 miles an hour at 13.5. That is really, really close. So, yeah, I could believe it's three. Just to give you an idea, I've got the same tire size. I've got three. Oh, no, at 65, you said?
No, at 60.
At 60. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So at 57, I'm at 1,400 with 390s. So
okay. You're
really, really close. I mean, 355s would put us up just a tad bit lower than that. So, and there's always a little bit of error because tires are, you know, slightly different sizes and speedometer and tech can be a little bit off. So I wouldn't argue the fact that they're 370s. Certainly could be.
Huh. Well, I'm amazed that we were, like, really concerned about that when we got it. We thought, oh, are we going to be able to get any fuel mileage out of it? But obviously
at 60, at 55 to about 63, that is the gear that I would recommend for that truck. That's exactly what I would put in it.
Okay, good.
Unless, now the other option, and this confuses a lot of people. If we stay with, you know, kind of the standard gearing, the stuff that you see all the time, then I would put 370s in that truck. That would be the right gear. The other option would be to go to 264s or 279s, and that seems like such a drastic difference, but we would run the truck in your direct gear then. And that's what confuses a lot of people. So they think, oh, 370 is way different because I hear Kevin talking about 264s, but that's running in a whole different gear in the transmission. So if we are running in an overdrive gear, which is the most common, then 370s to go 60 miles an hour is just about perfect.
Well, we've been trying to run it 58 most of the time. But, you know, sometimes we have to expedite, and so we'll have to kick it up to 65. But, I mean, that's our fuel mileage, and, you know, we've been running across 90 a lot. So, you know, I'm pleased. We're really happy. Yeah,
so let's just do some quick math. How many miles were on this truck when you bought it?
There were about 650,000 on it, honey, when we bought it, yeah, 635 to 650, yeah.
Okay, all right, and yeah. Let's just say that it was getting like 4.9 lifetime average. Let's just say it was 5, just to round things off, and you guys are getting over 7, but let's just call it 7, just to be on the real conservative side. Now, obviously, this truck has always had the potential to get 7 miles to the gallon, and you guys pulled that potential out. How much do you think you spent to get the fuel mileage up? It hasn't been $10,000 yet, has it?
Well, the truck we paid...
Well, not what you paid for the truck,
okay.
Just
what
the
we put
changes
into
you
it.
Made, that, yeah, that helped
yeah.
improve the fuel mileage.
Yeah, well, the fact that we bought a $7,000 APU and put new tires all the way around, that's over 10 grand right there.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah,
so we'll throw that. Let's call it 15. Just because
okay.
with the APU, that does cut your idle time down some. So let's call it 15. And in 600,000 miles, so roughly the changes you make, the difference between 5 miles to the gallon and 7 miles to the gallon, over the last 6 years, with fuel prices the way they are, rough estimate, save $15,000 a year. It's actually a little more than that. So I hear the music. I'm going to get to a break. When we come back, we're just going to show what could have been, what the lost opportunity in this truck that you guys have now pulled out the potential. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Before the break, I was talking with Rebecca in Indiana. I'm going to go back to that call. Rebecca, are you still with me? Rebecca? Oh, I know they're there somewhere. Well, you know what? I'm gonna put them back on hold, and they'll be able to hear me anyway. So what I want to go over here, I want to get people to start thinking more long-term when it comes to business. And many times people will look at an upgrade or a modification, and let's say it's $1,000. And many of the things we talk about are less than that, but let's say it's $1,000. And I know when you have to sit down and write that check for $1,000, that can be painful. And many times people will put off making the upgrades and the modifications, but here's the lost potential. Now, I am rounding way down on everything, but that truck was capable of getting 7+ miles to the gallon all this time, and yet somebody was happy with 5 or just left it that way. They lost between $75,000 and $100,000 during that time by not investing less than 15. Now, I do a lot of reading about business and investing, and I've been investing for a long time. I was a certified financial planner. I got to tell you, there is no place that you can invest 15 and get 75 to 100 back in 5 years. That just doesn't happen. But that's the potential in business. When you learn how to look at business long-term, you learn what things are truly investments, not expenses. The things we talk about on the show are investments. You know, when we talk about our latest fuel mileage upgrade, which is the Flow Below, that's an investment of $1,500. That investment over the life of the truck will return 10 times that amount, 15 times that amount. You can't get that investment anywhere. People get all excited about, oh, my friend told me about this stock, or, you know, look at what, screw all that. Invest into your own business. Learn what really works. The potential is amazing. And we see it here on the show every day. And I think that I sometimes overlook the numbers. But there was a quick turnaround. They bought a truck that was getting 5 miles to the gallon, and in a very short period of time, they brought it up over 7. So we know how much money was lost over the last 5 years on that truck. That is crazy. And then people say, oh, there's no money being an owner-operator. The hell there isn't. If you know how to run the business, there is a lot of money to be made. Let's head off to, right here in Oregon. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. How about you?
Well, I had a little rough time yesterday in Oregon. I got pulled into the scales there at Cascade Locks, and they pulled me around back, and I was prepared after listening to your brake show last week. I was all prepared with my brakes and everything, and then they decided just to do a level 3, which is no problem for me ever.
Right.
Until yesterday. And the DOT guy told me that I was suspended.
For what?
And he couldn't tell me for what. He said, I have a Texas driver's license. I'm a resident of Texas. I'm a former resident of Indiana, and Indiana had me suspended. And what I found out this morning, in talking to Indiana BMV, was that Texas never told Indiana that I got a Texas CDL, so they suspended me for not having a current medical on file in Indiana, even though my license is long expired.
Right.
It was just a mess. I mean, it was a paperwork mess. But it's straightened out now, I think. The scales never opened up this morning for me to clear it before I got out of there. I mean, they said they would open at 6. They weren't open at 6:30, so I took off, and hopefully when I get up here to LeGrand, I can pull into that scale if they're open and make sure that everything's all right. But in the meantime, I walked downtown last night and got something to eat, and as I was leaving, walking back out of town, I saw a little smart car that said, let's truck, trucking business and beyond.
Right. That's
and
right.
And it was your daughter.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I met your daughter last evening downtown. So I just thought that was kind of an amazing thing. I'm looking forward to meeting you guys next year at CMC. I'm hoping to be able to make arrangements to get into that. So, but
fantastic. We're looking forward to that.
But I just thought it was kind of an interesting little story there. And like I said, Indiana said that Texas never informed them that I changed my CDL to Texas, which could be, and they suspended me. But I've been through several DOTs, and that's never been caught until yesterday.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how some of that stuff happens. You know, when you were at the scale, I can't really see it because it's so heavily wooded around here, but I could almost, if I yelled really loud, you could almost hear me over there.
Oh, okay. Well, I would have liked to have had the opportunity to meet you yesterday, but that's fine. I got to meet one of your family members, and she was very, very kind and courteous and thanked me for listening to the show. And so I just want you to know
Excellent.
That. You've got a great daughter there.
Yeah.
Okay?
I appreciate that. Thanks for the call. Sorry you got hung up here in town. It sounds like it was a mix-up somewhere else, but, you know, the good news is you were prepared for the level one. The truck would have been fine. Who knew the paperwork got screwed up someplace else? But I'm glad you're on your way, and hopefully you get it cleared up later today. Let's go to Texas. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. I have a quick question about mountain climbing, and then also one with rolling resistance on tires and fuel economy.
Okay.
As for the mountain driving going, I purchased one of your scan gauges, and so far I believe I have saved at least half a mile per gallon using it.
Excellent.
When it comes to climbing, it seems I have kind of a mix of I guess, the cents per mile. One thing that I do is I find the gear that I can continually accelerate in on a climb.
Good.
And then I back the throttle down to about half in that gear to where I'm just running at 1,400 RPMs to climb. And then at other times, going up the mountain, it seems I get a lower cost per mile if I just let the engine kind of run down to about 1,050 to 1,100 RPMs and I just hold it at full throttle. So I'm kind of wondering which one is really the best way for fuel economy-wise when it comes to climbing.
Well, one of the things we might want to try, you know, when we're looking at cents per mile, which we love, you know, that was part of our custom programming in there, and I love that feature, but it takes into account a couple other things that could confuse the numbers. So what I would do is, as you're trying these hill climb techniques, I would skip looking at the cost per mile and the profit per mile, and I would put the instant read fuel economy, I would put boost, I would put load maybe, and I would watch those numbers. Those are only correlated to fuel economy, whereas the cost per mile, profit per mile, we have some other factors in there that could screw up our numbers. So, and it's hard to say. It is possible, and this is why we like the scan gauge so much, because the more you use it, the more you're going to learn. There isn't any one simple answer. The techniques you just described are spot on. I mean, that's exactly the things you want to be doing when you're climbing, but you're going to the next level. You're saying, well, that worked, but what if I try this? And that's how we all learn. I mean, we've changed over the years. We've added new advice and changed the way we talked about things because we learn more and more all the time playing around with it. And it sounds like it's obviously helping a lot already. But when you're making a direct comparison like that about fuel economy and which gear and which RPM and those kind of things, I would skip the cost per mile and the profit per mile. Too many other variables in those, and I would look at the instant read fuel economy, boost, load, horsepower, those kind of things.
Okay. Then my question about rolling resistance on tires. Right now I have Kelly KDMI 22.5s on my drives, and I use the Michelin tire calculator to look at the Michelin energy tires, line Ds, and it says I'd save 70 in rolling resistance, which, according to the math, is 7/10 of a mile per gallon. Is that really, really the case? 7/10?
You know, which Kelly do you have?
The KDMIs.
Oh, yeah, that is true. You will save 7/10.
Okay, so that 70, that tenth of a mile per gallon for every 10. Is really, I have trouble believing that.
Yep.
That
hey, got to put you on hold. I'll come back to you in a minute. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Hold on, and I'll come back to you right after this break. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Tim in Texas about some rolling resistance numbers. Tim, yeah, that I just went and looked it up to make sure I was right. The Kelly tire has a rolling resistance in the 150s, and you know the Michelin gets down into the 80, high 80, low 90 range, I think. So yeah, you're looking at it, and I know people find this hard to believe, but we've done this so many times over the years, not just run the calculations online. We've tracked people who have made these changes over and over and over. I've tracked it in my own trucks. We've tracked it in hundreds of other trucks. And the 10 points in rolling resistance for 1/10 of a mile per gallon is pretty darn accurate. And that means, and this is the thing that people have a hard time getting their head around. People will say, well, you know, I looked at those Michelins, but they are so expensive. They are. I get that. But there's a reason. And let's call it 6/10 of a mile per gallon instead of 7, again, to be conservative. That means that every year you run the Kelly instead of running the Michelin, you will spend an additional $5,000 in fuel. Now, I know people who get 3 years out of their drive tires. That's $15,000 in fuel. I can buy a lot of tires for that.
Okay, so, because I'm looking at my return on investment, I mean, I calculated mine at half a mile per gallon to be a little more conservative than the 7/10.
Yeah, that's
good. And right now, I'm leasing a trailer for $1,200 a month and a refrigerated, and I'm looking at buying my own trailer versus buying the tires for return on investment. And I know buying a trailer, well, I'm guaranteed to save $600 a month because my trailer payment would be $600 instead of $12.
Oh,
and the tires,
okay.
Just kind of wrapping my head around the 7/10, just
got it. Well,
it seems out there.
I can tell you the numbers are there, but you threw in another factor here. So, and I like the way you're thinking. This is why I like people who run the business by the numbers. So let's think about this, because I am with you. Owning a trailer is a huge plus in this business. Not only the savings that you'll get from what it's costing you to rent that trailer, that's big, that's tangible. We know you get that right off the bat. But you can also improve your fuel economy when you control the trailer. And all the other benefits of keeping it clean, keeping it well-maintained, not dealing with all the other junk, and it's yours. So it's an investment that you're getting back. So here's what I might look at doing. On the surface, the numbers you just told me, as much as those tires are going to save you, I think the trailer is going to save you more. So if we have to make the decision right now, trailer or tires, I think I'm going to lean towards trailer. But think about this, too. Look around, and what if you buy the trailer and you go find a used set of any tire that has a rolling resistance in the 110 range and pick up a set of tires cheap to get, because your rolling resistance is so bad at 150. If we could go and are your tires still worth something?
They're 17/32.
See, you might be able to cut a really sweet deal somewhere and make kind of an equal trade. Maybe you pick up some tires that have 12 or 14/32. You give yours up at 17, even if you have to pay a little money. See where I'm going with this? It may not be the perfect solution. You may not get the exact tire we want right now, but you're also not going to have to go spend, you know, $6,000 to do it. You might be able to spend a couple hundred or less than $1,000 and still pick up 3 or 4 tenths on your tires and get the trailer. And then
all right,
you're going to save so much money between the better tires, not the best tires, but the better tires. And remember, if we pick up a set of tires that has 12/32, they're getting even better fuel economy, quite a bit better than when they were new. So if you do this in the next, say, 30 days, get the trailer, find a good deal on a set of tires that have a better rolling resistance, you're going to save enough money in 4 or 5 months that you can go out and buy the Michelins.
Okay, and that's actually looking at about the next 30 days on making a decision.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, that'll get you all the way through the summer, and then, you know, heading into fall, you'll have the cash to go out and buy the new Michelins and be all set for winter.
All right. Well, I appreciate your advice, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I love people who are running the business by the numbers and thinking, and that was a great example of it right there. Let's head off to North Carolina. Terry, welcome to the program.
How you doing today, Kevin?
Good. What can I help you with?
Sent an oil sample over there for you to take a look at.
All right, let's see what we've got here. So this is a 60 series. What year?
It's a 98 model.
98. I'm showing 341,000 on the engine and about 99,000 on the oil. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you're running a 540 synthetic?
I was, and I changed it over to just regular Rotella. I probably didn't have it about 20,000 miles on it. It's going through a gallon of oil about every 3,500 or so. It hasn't seemed to increase any.
Okay.
Seth, and the silicone in it, or silicon, went up, and I found the problem. My air filter wasn't sealed, so I resealed the filter, and it started cleaning everything again.
Yeah. I'm also going to guess you've got some mucus in this?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. So everything I'm seeing is making sense, so let's kind of talk about what we've got here. First off, the engine is performing really well. No fuel dilution, no soot, staying nice and clean as far as that goes. Now, part of that is we're putting in a lot of fresh oil, but I can also see that it's not worried about the tune or anything like that. When did the oil consumption start?
It's been like that since I bought the truck. I've had about maybe 120,000 miles on it since I bought it.
Okay.
And it hasn't,
okay. So
it hasn't really consumed any more or less.
Here's what happened. And I want to point this out so people understand the value in doing oil samples. Because I can tell you exactly what happened to this engine. They did an in-frame on it. Great thing. But that air cleaner has been leaking for a long time. And the silicon numbers were really high all that time, and nobody knew it. There's no way to know that. You can't see it. But silicon is like sandpaper. It's dirt. And it gets in the oil. Now, the oil becomes abrasive, and the first thing we wipe out are the liners and the rings. And that's exactly what happened to this engine, 300,000 miles on an in-frame. And honestly, it's very close to needing another one. And all they would have had to have done in the beginning was a couple oil samples for $50, and we would have saved a $15,000 engine. It's all so simple as an air filter not sealing or a paper element getting torn somewhere. And dirt starts to get in, no way to know it without sampling, and we lost, you know, a $15,000 in-frame because somebody didn't want to spend $50 on an oil sample. So, you know, the best thing we can do now is exactly what you're doing. You went back to the standard Rotella, good move, keep the Lucas in there, and all we can do now is buy some time. But this engine's going to need another in-frame. I think at the outside you might squeeze a year out of it, but that's pushing it.
Yeah, I've been figuring a year for about a year now.
Oh, well, good. You know, and sometimes when we do all the right stuff, you know, we get this is one of those cases where Lucas does help a lot. It will protect that engine and slow down some of the wear and some of the oil consumption and just keep running it. This is a case, you know, sometimes I talk about when we have a high mileage engine, a million plus, and it's using a lot of oil. And somebody calls me and says, boy, I know I'm ready for an in-frame, but I don't have the money. And my advice is, well, let's baby it. Let's see what we can do. This is a little different situation. I'm going to tell you why when we get back. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. right, real quick, I'll give you a heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment, so at the end I'm going to say goodnight, I'm out of here, all that stuff. Don't hang up. We are still trying to get a hold of Bruce. Now, I kind of screwed up yesterday. I told Bruce 2 o'clock his time. It's really going to be earlier than that. So we are still trying to get a hold of him, so we'll see what happens in the second hour. But don't hang up at the end of this segment. We'll come back and I'll let you know what's going on. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Terry in North Carolina about an oil sample. So, Terry, here's the thing. This is one of those times where I would just keep running this engine until you were just tired of putting oil in it. I mean, even if we get down to where it's a gallon every 1,500, let's say, which is pretty extreme, okay. but even if we got to that point, so what? You're putting oil in it. Big deal. It's not that big of a cost. This isn't like a real high mileage engine where we're worried about a catastrophic failure, because a lot of the parts in the engine were done on the in-frame. The cylinder kits are worn out. Big deal. Run it. Put oil in it. Just, you know, when you're ready to do the in-frame, do it. But I don't see this one as being as much of a risk as somebody who has 1.2, 1.3 and the engine's never been touched. I mean, in that case, I always tell people, look, you can keep running it, put Lucas in it, buy yourself some time, but you could just have a part let loose, and we won't see it coming. You right. don't have that much of a risk on this one. So it's more like just keep running it till you're tired of putting oil in it.
Okay, the only one I'm really worried about, because I'm trying to watch it, is the base number. Do I need to try to get one of those filters she's talking about that has the base in it and go ahead and spin it on?
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Yep,
okay,
that would be a good idea.
Where do you like seeing that number at?
You know, here's the thing. It's different for every oil, and I'll explain why real quick. What happens is every oil starts with a different amount of base. It's all the different formulations and the way they do things, and it's not good or bad if an oil has more base or less. It's just a different formulation. What we look for is, I'm going to use an easy number. Let's say it started with a base of 10, which isn't all that far off. There are a lot of oils right in that number. We want the oil to maintain about 75% of its base. When it drops below 25 is when we start looking to get it back up. So you're really still in good shape. I mean, Rotella is right around 10 or 11, so you could drop all the way to 2.5 before it even becomes an issue, and you're still above 4. So right now, I would say, don't even worry about getting the filters. One of the things that's happening is you're putting in so much fresh oil, you're replenishing the base all the time. If it stays above 3.5, I would say just keep doing what you're doing. If it drops below 3.5, then go ahead and spin one of those filters on.
Okay, cool deal. That's a number I was looking for right there.
Yep, that'll do it. So, like I say, not that big of a deal. You're burning a little bit of oil. Doesn't really hurt anything. Actually adds a little bit to your fuel economy. The oil is combustible, providing energy, you know, in the combustion chamber. So in this case, I just wouldn't get that too worried about it. I would just keep running this thing. But I do want to point out again the value of a $50 oil sample or less. And a good oil analysis program would have saved this $15,000 engine. Somebody did this in frame, spent all that money, and then the air filter, for whatever reason, didn't get sealed properly. And I've seen this happen. And without the oil sample, you never know this, and we lost an engine. Now, we'll get as many miles as we can out of this, but this engine should have lasted 6 more years. Let's go to let's head off to Wisconsin. Ray, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. How's it going?
Going great. What's on your mind today?
Well, I heard you guys talk about it, and I decided to do it. I just wanted to affirm with you and with the listeners that changing from a 10-speed to a 13-speed transmission did improve my fuel mileage half a gallon to the mile. And
wow.
I know it because I reported one section that I knew was the toughest section that I drive from Ohio on I-76 to Philadelphia back to Shelbyville, Indiana. And I went from 6.25 miles per gallon to 6.75 miles per gallon.
Increase.
Yeah, I didn't really expect that much, but doing it over the mountains really surprised me. So I just want to let everybody know that, hey, it worked, and it's working real good.
Excellent. You know, this is one of those questions that, you know, I get every once in a while, and it's not a slam dunk. It's not an easy decision, mostly because of the cost. Now, if somebody needs a transmission and they're going to go spend the money anyway, then no question. I mean, let's do the upgrade. The 13-speed can make a big difference in some operations. But when we look at, a lot of times people will call me and they haven't hardly done anything to their truck, and they want to run out and get another transmission. And I'll say, wait a minute. That's $6,000 to $8,000, unless you can get a killer deal and do some of the work yourself. But let's just call it $6,000 to $8,000, and we can do a lot of fuel mileage upgrades for that money first. And depending on the operation, for example, in my operation, I ran Florida and Georgia. Even the team truck I had ran Orlando to L.A. across I-10. I ran all 10 speeds. Because the 13-speed just wouldn't have paid for itself in that case. So it really depends on the operation, how heavy you are, how many hills you're going to be in, driving style, all kinds of things. But I'm glad it really worked out well for you. Uh-oh. I hear some noise there, but I'm not hearing you. Oh, we just lost that call. All right, so let's head off to Illinois. George, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. I wanted to start out with saying thank you for your audio and CD program. I got it, I think, about 6 months ago. Didn't follow it to the letter. I found a deal I thought I couldn't pass up. Got a 2000 Volvo with a Series 60 Detroit in it. I made an offer at $9,000. The guy took the offer, so I couldn't mess around for too long.
Excellent.
A couple questions on it. I am on your fuel gauges. I believe we only have about not even 90 days on there. And the last time I checked it, I think we're right around 6.9.
Okay, great.
First question I have is, short of having an OPS system on here, is there a way, other than doing an oil change, to pull an oil sample to get it analyzed? I got the kits.
Oh, yeah.
I got 5 of them from you guys. I went out and bought a piece of tubing. I was going to try and just suction some out, but it would not fit in the dipstick hole. It went so far in, and I don't know if there's something in there that constricts just to tighten up the dipstick. And then I tried to go through the filler, and it looks like there's something that kind of S's around that I couldn't get a hose in there to pull any kind of oil out.
Yeah, you might just have the wrong size tubing. We use the Vampire tubes all the time. So just maybe try a different tubing, because we call it a Vampire tube. That should work. You send it right down the tube, hold your thumb over it, pull it out, fill the sample bottles. We do a ton of them that way. You know, there are some other options as far as, you know, pulling the drain plug. and letting just a little bit go into a pan, then grab some midstream, then stick the plug back up. There's kind of messy. It's not horrible, though. And then you'll top it off with a gallon or two. I mean, you're not going to lose much more than that. So that's another option.
Well, for this first one, I'm actually going to get my truck serviced probably on Monday. It'll be approximately 27,000 miles on this oil, and I know the motor went right around 25,000 before I even had to put a gallon in it.
Oh, excellent.
That's a
nice tight engine.
I'm pretty sure the motor has 1.467, so just under 1.5 million miles on it. So when it went 25,000 without using any oil, I was really happy with that part. The other real question I have is, how much fuel mileage could I be looking to gain? I got a gentleman, I'm going to do a switch with him probably while my truck is being serviced at our company shop. He's running drivers in his trucks, and he doesn't really like the super singles on them for his drivers. They're less likely to check the pressures and stuff. So I'm going to trade out his super singles for my duals. I have an off-brand, I believe it's called a Samson. Samson, S-A-M-O-S-O-N. The lugs on it make you think of a farm tractor tire. And
I'm going to have to cut you off because we're out of time. I will tell you, from a Samson to a Michelin-wide single, you are going to pick up anywhere from 3 to 5 tenths of a mile per gallon. I got to get out of here. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, real quick, we're getting ready to start our second hour. I've got Bruce Mallinson here with us. So right now we will be screening calls for engine-related questions. Bruce and I always have tons of stuff we can talk about, but I'd love to get to some of your calls and questions. So Lisa will start screening those calls right now. So if you've got a engine-related question for Bruce, go ahead and press 1 on your phone. And we'll start working through those. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. We answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. Really excited tonight to announce a special guest joining me. He's been with our show for years and years now, but we don't get to talk to him on the air as much as we'd like to, but we are going to change that. We're going to start bringing him on more often because we've always got a lot of stuff to talk about. And of course, I'm talking about Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power. Bruce, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Always great to have you here. You know, we've just got to start doing this more often. You know, you and I have so much to talk about. You bring so much value to the show. And I know you're busy, and I appreciate any time you can set aside. We need to do this more often.
All you need to do is call me a day or two ahead of time.
I will start doing that. I will start doing that. So, hey,
one day notice is great. One day works, so.
Yeah, well, I'll try to get you 2 or maybe even a week if I get really organized. Who knows? You know, before we get down to whatever we're going to get down to today, I had a call on my last show, and it kind of makes me crazy. You know, we've been talking about oil analysis for a very long time. Whether or not you do extended drains, that's another issue, but just oil analysis, no matter how often you decide to change your oil. I had a caller who bought a truck, and, you know, he bought a used truck. We recommend it all the time. And it had an in-frame 200,000 miles earlier. Well, when he bought the truck, he started seeing that it was using a gallon of oil every 4,000 miles right off the bat, and it had 200,000 on an in-frame. And he immediately did an oil sample, and what we saw was very high silicon. And I tried to explain to people, silicon is dirt. It's sand. It's like sandpaper in your oil. And it turns out that all it was a bad seal on an air filter, letting dirt into this brand new engine, this in-frame, and it polished the cylinders. And, you know, for a $50 oil sample, we lost a $15,000 in-frame.
That's correct. That's called liner bore polish. And once you take the crosshatch off the liners, the rings will no longer seal. The liner, right away, first of all, people always think that a ring breaks in. Rings don't break in. Rings are chrome. The liner breaks in. The crosshatch breaks into the rings. And when you get high silicon, then that is what takes. And then, like you said, it's like sandpaper. And you know, we're noticing the fleet air filters are really getting that fine sandpaper out of there. Mike Lane, who was at the CMC and 15,000 miles on his Western Star, he is at 3 parts per million on silicon, and that's great.
That's what
we don't
want to
see higher than 8.
Right. Yeah, that's what we like to see, those low numbers. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. The paper element is, you know, hasn't changed in 100 years. And it's just a real compromise. When you put a brand new paper element in, you get much better airflow, which is nice. Sometimes you even see a fuel mileage increase. But it's because there's so much room, there's so much airflow that you're also getting that real fine dust and silicon. We see that when somebody replaces an air filter too often, a paper element, we actually see more silicon in the oil all the time. The foam is so much better because the foam itself is very porous. That's why we get a lot of airflow. But the oiled foam, the oil actually statically attracts the dust. So even though we allow a lot of airflow through a fleet air filter, we capture all the dirt and dust because of the oil properties and the static and the way that works. So that's why it's such a much better technology than paper.
That's correct. And you remember the filter mags that I showed you at the CMC?
Yes.
Big magnets, the rare earth magnet, they're doing a phenomenal job. We're seeing people's samples coming back cleaner. And when you have high silicon, you also have high iron because you're taking your cylinder walls away. So now when we put magnets on, we're taking that out of there. And what we're starting to do is put the filter magnets on the full-flow oil filter on every rebuild because we tell people on a new rebuild, you change your oil between 1,000 and 2,000 miles. Next oil change is at 8,000 miles. And then you can go up to 12 or 15 for the third change. And then we look at oil consumption, look at your oil analysis, and determine when you're going to change your oil. But these magnets are doing a phenomenal job. I'm really impressed with them. I can't believe it's been like 15 or 18 years ago when I bought them for my Dodge Cummins. And they disappeared, and now they're back.
Well, and the crazy thing is they still work after all that time.
Yeah, it still works. It's a phenomenal magnet, so we're selling a lot of them, and Pear went on a brand new Fitzgerald glider kit yesterday, 12.7 in a T660, I'm sorry, and hasn't even pulled a trailer yet, so we're going to get the break-in iron out of the oil right from the start. Hey, I want to talk about that person that was on just on the show. He was having trouble getting oil out to do an oil analysis. Do you want to know how Bruce does it?
How does Bruce do it? I do want to know.
I just take the turbo. I take the turbo feed line off, and I hold a quart jar in there, a glass quart jar. I have somebody start the truck and shut it off, and that'll give me maybe a half a quart of oil.
Wow.
And then you just hook up your turbo feed line, and see, you're getting the oil now that's in the system. So you take it off,
yeah.
And you do it when the engine's hot, you take the turbo feed line off. Now, if your truck happens to have a steel tube, you may have to stop at a hardware store and get a piece of that clear hose and get like the 3/4 or the 1 inch and push it up over the fitting, because you can't bend, you might not be able to bend the tube far enough, the steel tube, away from the fitting. So just slide the clear hose, get maybe a foot or two of it, put it in the jar, you start the truck and you shut the truck off. As soon as it starts, you just shut it right off, and that'll give you more than enough for your sample.
What a great idea. I love that.
All you need is a 5/8 inch wrench.
Fantastic.
After 38 years, Kevin, you kind of learn these things, you know.
That's why we bring you on the show, because every time I talk to you, I learn something new.
Well, we try to make life better for people.
I love that. That is the whole point of the show. And,
yeah.
You know, between the stuff you guys have developed, what we developed, it really has. I mean, we get feedback all the time. People, you know, thank us for doing this, but this is what we love to do, and there are so many ways to do this stuff better. You know, I watch these guys on the road struggle with everything, and there are so many ways to make life easier and make your business better.
And we just discovered something yesterday on an Acer Cat in a beautiful 379, a very well-maintained truck. The engine mount I'll measure it. It's a piece of steel, 3/8 inch thick. It's 5.5 inches wide. It's got a crack 3 3/4 inches long right through it. This thing was about to fail. We have, and it's steel. This is not the aluminum part that goes across the engine. This is the steel ear that's bolted to the frame rail.
Wow.
And we just happened to catch it while running some wires, because we're doing a tremendous amount of electrical work on trucks anymore. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm going to, as soon as we get off the show, I'm going to send you a picture to your iPhone, because this is going to be in one of the magazine articles. This is shocking. If this would have broke and it would have taken the other side with it, if the front axle didn't catch the engine and that damper would have gone down and hit the asphalt, it would have catapulted the truck up in the air. He now would have no steering. His bell housing would have broke, and it would have sent the transmission up through the floor, and it could have killed him.
Wow. Hey, the music's playing. Let me get to a break on that comment, and we will come right back. We have lots to talk about today. We're also going to get to some of your calls and questions. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Joining me tonight, a very special guest. He's been with our show for a lot of years now, but we haven't had him on nearly as much as I'd like to. We're going to change that. Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power. Bruce, that is That's an amazing catch that you guys made, and it's hard to even think about everything you might have saved this person.
It's shocking, and he lives over in Ohio. He stopped by yesterday, and he was stunned. And like I say, this is a very, very clean truck. In fact, this fellow used to, he does some high-performance jet ski racing, but he used to do SCCA Solo 1 in an AC Cobra when I did it in the 66 Corvette. So he's a gearhead, and he's one of us.
Yeah.
He's got a million, I think it's a 1,160,000 on the engine, still perfect. It's had a power box on it its entire life. He does make great horsepower, but wow. Where do you see this picture?
Wow. Wow is right. Yeah, I do want to see that. And, you know, this is one of the things that even people who really take care of their equipment and understand it well, this is the kind of stuff that can happen. It just makes you realize you've got to be really watching things and paying attention. And then you see some of these trucks going down the road that aren't taken care of at all. And it really just kind of makes you shudder as to what could happen.
Right. We, now being this is the first one that we have found, first one in 38 years, you know there's going to be more to follow. So what we do on every truck that comes in the shop, we pressurize the whole intake system from the turbo, the piping, the charge air cooler, back through to the intake manifold and the air compressor. And we usually find a couple small leaks and we fix those. But we are going to start sliding under and getting a high-intensity light and looking at these engine mounts on these trucks that are a million-plus miles, because I have a feeling we caught this one, that there has to be more out there.
That's
and,
usually
you know,
the
that's
case.
One of the, yeah. And that's one of the advantages of a man that greases his own truck and he gets underneath it and he looks and he spends some time. You know, a person that's really good at that is someone that calls into your show a lot, Al Hemerson.
Oh, yeah.
Al takes rags and wipes off underneath his truck, and so does Carl Kellner. Carl has a 99 379 with a 2WS cat. He has his own hoist. His truck's up in the air every Saturday, and he wipes it off with those blue towels. He catches everything before it fails. And you need to do this. You need to spend some time underneath your truck. If you just put some cardboard down, or if you find a clean parking lot, put some coveralls on and get underneath there with some gloves and a rag and just wipe and look. And if you see hoses and wires hanging, put wire ties on them.
You know, there are so many.
You know why you
want to
black
point
wire
out.
Go ahead. Do you know why you use black ties on a truck instead of white wire ties?
No.
The white wire ties get hard and brittle in a couple years and they break off. They're affected by the ozone.
Ah.
Or the UV.
Interesting.
The UV. Yes. So you always buy black wire ties. When they put the DirecTV in my home 7 years ago, they put the wires up the downspout and they used white wire ties. Now, there's no movement. No movement on a downspout, right? On a house?
Right. Right.
They broke off. They broke off 7 years. Actually, it was about 6 years because I replaced them last year with black ones. But for years, we've known this on automotive. Never use white wire ties. Always use black ones.
Another great tip. So simple and yet so bold. One of the other things I wanted to talk about, people might think this is crazy, but, you know, I talked about this a lot at the CMC. We started every morning out with a kind of a meditation to clear your mind, start the day. We are so bombarded today with nonstop stimulus and information. Our phone is constantly attached to us, and buzzing and beeping and calls and text messages, and everybody wants our attention. And I will tell you, one of the benefits of when you get comfortable with your truck, crawling under there and wiping things down and looking around, it's therapeutic. There are no other distractions. And I would tell people, turn off your phone. Leave your phone somewhere else. Set aside a half hour, an hour, whatever you have. Maybe in the beginning it's only 10 minutes. But crawl under there and just get to be, you know, familiar with your truck. You'll save yourself a ton of money and headache. And this can actually be very relaxing.
It can be. And you become one with the truck.
Exactly. Very zen-like. Hey, great stuff, Bruce. We have you. I know you and I could talk for hours, but we've got lots of questions for you. You want to grab some?
Yeah, in fact, we just have it looks like a 1960 Butterfly Hood Peterbilt pulling in the parking lot right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, you better send somebody out to get some pictures of that thing.
Yeah, he's been in before. Hey, I wanted to say something else. 3 weeks ago, ISX was in, ISX that we had rebuilt a couple years ago, and it had an ECM failure. And Leroy came to me. He's one of the new electrical engineers that we got from a company that built printed circuit boards. So he knows how to take printed circuit boards apart. He said, Bruce, this needs a new ECM. I said, you know which component is bad? He said, I have a pretty good idea which one. I said, do we have an old board we can take that part off of? He said, well, this one's pretty tricky. I said, did I not buy you that $700 air-operated solder gun so you could do that? And he smiled. He
That's
said,
right.
I'll do it.
Oh, how cool.
And then we put it on the tester because we can simulate it running on the truck on our benchtop tester, and he had to run a jumper wire inside to connect two other ones. So we had, I think it was about $10 or $11 in parts and 3 hours of labor, we saved a $2,000 ECM.
Wow.
And it's,
that's very
it's
cool.
Out and running. It's from Broomfield, Colorado, too.
Great things are happening. Yeah, I'd love that. Lots of exciting stuff. Let's grab a call. Let's head out to Tulsa. Tim, welcome to the program. You're on the air with
me. Hey, Bruce. Honored to talk to you. Along the lines of the ECM, I had a question about your power box. I have an 04 60 Series Detroit that has the EGR has been removed and or other programs put in the ECM. Can you still add a power box to a motor like that?
Absolutely. Just let us know what you've done to it, and we'll get you the right power box, and just plug it in, and away you go.
Great. Good news.
Yep, that's
Thank
no
you very
problem.
Much.
You're quite welcome. It'd be best if you could stop by here, and let's check out the electrical system, and then we'll know we have the right combination. But if not, if you call us on the phone, describe to us what you've done, and we can match you up with a power box.
Well, Bruce, would sending you the ECM in the mail be sufficient, or do you need hands on the truck?
Yes, that would be good, too. That would be good.
Okay.
If you overnight it to us, we'll overnight it back the same day, so you'll be 2.5 days without it. And that way we would know exactly what program was put in there so we can match that up for you.
All right. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
All right, Tim, thanks for the call. Hey, Bruce, that was perfect timing because I was just going to ask you a similar question. I know you guys are, the last time I talked to you, working on the power box for the DD15, right?
Yes, and it's basically there. A couple fine-tuning things we need to do.
Got
so
it.
It's finished. It's just not quite ready for sale. It's got to go through a little bit more testing.
Excellent. So I had a caller earlier this week who had some, he described it as custom programming on his ECM on a DD15. He wasn't exactly sure what it was. And he was very interested in the DD15 power box, and he asked me the same question. With custom programming in there, could he still use a power box? And I said, you know, that's a question you really need to call and ask Bruce, but it sounds like as long as you guys know what's going on in there, that's possible.
Yeah. It would be best if he could stop by here. When you have electrical problems, it's always best to get by our shop because they're hard to diagnose, over the telephone. And then if we diagnose it over the phone, how are you going to fix it anyway? That's
right.
Why we hire these electrical engineers, these young, aggressive computer techie guys. Every day we learn more, too, about wiring.
Absolutely.
We even know which trucks have the worst wiring and which trucks have the best wiring.
That's important to know. Hey, hold on. The music's playing. I'm going to have to get to a break. We'll come right back. Lots more stuff right around the corner, so don't go away. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Joining me today, Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Joining me today, Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power. Bruce, we've got some more calls here, so let's get to some phone calls. Let's head off to Texas. And Adina, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call. I had an overhead done about 50,000 miles ago, and I noticed that I didn't have any jakes anymore after I was done. So I went back in, and the truck just didn't seem to perform right. So when I went back in and they checked it over, they said that the valve adjustment, it was out of adjustment. So they adjusted the valves, and then as I tested it in the parking lot, or if I'm light, I feel the compression of the jakes. But if I'm coming down not even a steep hill, the jakes don't seem to give me the power that I used to have.
How many pounds of turbo boost do you have when the jake brake is on?
Oh, that's one thing I didn't look. I always look to see how much boost I use when I'm running, but I didn't think to see how much boost when I was when I'm coming down the hill.
If you're coming down a hill, say Vail Pass or out of the Eisenhower Tunnel or some major hill, look and see how many pounds of turbo boost you're using at a given RPM. Let's say you're at 1,600 RPM. Look over at the boost gauge, and let's say it's, say, 18 pounds or 15 pounds. And then you go in and you have your overhead set or something else done, and now you come back and you only have 8 or 10 pounds going down that same hill, you know there's a problem.
Okay, yeah, because I run the same route, and I'm on the same route all the time, and so I will be hitting that. It's not even a steep grade, but I'm constantly on the brakes, and so is that's what I need to do. I need to check my boost and my RPMs.
Yeah, look at your boost and see when you have the jake brake on how many pounds of boost you have. You should always make a mental note to that. That's something you should, when going down a hill, you should always look at the turbo boost gauge to see how many pounds of boost you're making with the jake on, because the higher the number, the stronger the braking.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. Okay, yeah, I never thought to check that. Okay, so
now, what part of the country are you in?
I live in California. I go to one shop. I go to Cummins in Tolson, Arizona. They're the ones that do all the work on my truck. I've had it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
My question. You don't get east. You don't get east, so we can't help you.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out, and then once I do figure out how much boost and how much turbo, do I go ahead and call Kevin back?
No, you should call Cummins. You should take it back to where it was worked on.
Okay, so what I should be between 18 and 15 coming down the hill?
No, No, every truck will be different, and every hill will be different. You need to know what your truck does before and after.
Okay.
Just like you should know how many pounds of boost do you use to go up a good hill. Do you know that?
Yeah, it's about 25 to 28.
Okay. Do you still have that same power going up a hill after they set the overhead?
Yeah, I do have the power going up.
Okay. Then it sounds like they need to do an adjustment on the Jake brake.
Okay.
Now, how many miles are on that Jake brake?
Well, I have 88, 80, 1900. I don't even know how to say it. It's 888019. Sorry.
888,000.
Yes, there you go. Years ago,
we used to rebuild Jake brakes between 300,000 and 400,000, maybe 500,000 miles, because they do get a little varnish inside. And there's spools and plungers in there, and there's springs on top of this, what they call a spool. And the spool is what lets the oil in. So maybe you need to have the Jake brake rebuilt. And it's not a very involved process.
Okay. Yeah, because I've never had it rebuilt. Yeah, thank you, Bruce. I appreciate it very much. Hey, Kevin, I'd like to say thank you. I paid my truck off last year, and with all your help, I just appreciate everything you do. And can you please put me with Lisa so I can sign up for the CMC?
Absolutely, will do. Hey, one more question. Are you doing oil samples?
Yes, I am, but not that frequent.
Okay. One, and just like Bruce was talking about, knowing boost, going up a hill, going down a hill, knowing that before any work gets done or any problem happens, and then comparing it after. Oil samples are really good for the same thing. Many times we see an engine go in. They do an overhead just based on some random mileage because they think it's time to do it. And many times we see the oil samples come back worse afterwards, more soot, meaning we're not burning the fuel as well. So you might want to, since we're not sure if they've got that set right, you might want to do an oil sample and let's take a look at it.
Okay, I have two of your kits now. I'll go ahead and pull an oil sample and send it in, and then I'll give you a call back.
Excellent. Sounds great. I'll put you back on hold. We'll get you taken care of for the CMC. Bruce, a lot of times now I'm seeing, and again, sometimes it's new callers. I've been telling people, look, don't do an overhead until we have some clear indication that you need one. That, you know, performance has dropped, fuel mileage has dropped, the oil sample's showing, you know, indications, because I'm seeing guys go in and do overheads just because they're at a certain mileage and things end up getting worse.
Well, you got to be careful who you have do it.
That's what I keep telling you. I am shocked at how bad some of the work is.
It's good preventative maintenance, but you have to have a person that really knows how to set a valve and injector. I learned on a small block Chevrolet and a 61 Corvette with the engine running.
Is that right?
So, yeah, you had to set them with the engine running. It was a 30-30 camshaft. And I said, man, that was brutal because the engine was hot and the oil splashing and rubber gloves all the way up to your shoulders. And next time I see you, I'll show you on my index finger on my right hand the marks that are still there. I was 18 years old. And the marks are still in that finger from the pushing that feeler gauge through.
Wow. Wow.
I used to think that nobody could set valves and injectors as good as me until I started teaching my own guys and found out, hey, I can teach people how to do this. Hey, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's what it comes down to. It's not that this stuff is rocket science. I mean, but there are clear, specific ways that you should be doing things. And we don't seem to be teaching people all that well. And then we just don't seem to have enough people who care enough to learn it right and then do it right.
That's the number one problem in this side of the trucking industry, is finding people that want to do it and care. huge problem. And between my house and my shop here, there's it's 5 miles, and there's 5 help wanted signs.
Yeah.
It's all different kinds of business.
There are so many opportunities in this country. It is unbelievable. And, you know, people say, well, there aren't any good jobs, or you have to have a college education, it's too expensive, and on and on and on. You hear all these excuses, but I look around and see opportunities everywhere for somebody who just cares enough to be really good at something.
What college did you go to?
The School of Hard Knocks.
That's my college, too. Actually, I had to go to community college. It was community college or Vietnam, but I couldn't wait to get out of community college to go home and work in the garage on the race cars, because then I had to go to work at Motor Freight Express. I was a midnight dock foreman. You know, so anyway, you know, life was brutal back then. There's a saying, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. But people don't seem to look at it that way. You have to stand back and say, what went wrong here? What happened? How can I make sure this doesn't happen again? And how can I fix this situation? It's that making lemonade out of lemons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, let's get to... do you have something else?
Yeah, one question. We cleaned 6 engines with the CL8 engine cleaning system out at the CMC. I haven't had a chance to call any of the people. Eric Wheeler has spoke to a couple of them. Have you heard anything about how clean your oil stain?
You know, I had one call. Oop, there's the music. Yeah, I had one call. I'll tell you a little bit about it when we get back from this break. So hold on. We'll come right back, and we will talk about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm talking with Bruce Mallinson. We're talking about all kinds of things, so we're going to get right back to it. Bruce, you know, I had one call this last week, but I don't know that this is a good example, and I'll tell you why. He had the service done, was happy with the bunch of stuff he got done. He checked the oil, and I forget the exact miles. It was not a lot, but enough. And he said his oil was black again. But here's the thing. It was a 60 Series Detroit. Now, I've owned a ton of these engines, and I've always said, I don't care what you do to that engine. When they're brand new, you know, 20,000 miles on them, I'll do an oil change, and a couple days later, my oil looks black on the dipstick again. It's just, I don't know what it is about that engine. We've done thousands and thousands of oil samples. We can take a cat, which in my opinion, the pre-emission cats, they keep the oil clean. I mean, they just do. You pull the dipstick out of those things, and the oil always seems to look clean. The Detroit seems to be the exact opposite, and yet we can send those two oil samples in, and they come back virtually identical. Both of them are clean. I don't know what it is about a Detroit that just always seems to turn the oil black on the dipstick.
I'm going to have to think about that one, but there was a fella called Eric, and he has an ISX EGR, and he was ecstatic. He made 3 rounds to Miami, Florida, and back from somewhere in the West, and said he's just starting to see his oil turn.
Yeah, I believe it. You know, after watching the process and seeing the stuff they were getting out of the engine, it made a lot of sense to me. I just, like I say, brand new Detroits, and we know there's no junk built up in them yet. They still tend to do that very early after an oil change. I don't know why.
Well, that would be a project to take. Was that John's truck?
You know, now I don't remember who it was.
Okay, I'm going to call him. He's having it's a Detroit reman engine. He built the glider, and he's having a high soot problem. I'm going to give him a call and get him in here. Let's see what we can find on that.
Yeah. You know, that's another thing. A pre-emission Detroit, that is typically an engine that runs really, really low soot numbers. When they're tuned right, when you've got, you know, we tell people all the time, you put your muffler on it, bleed air filter, and the overhead set right, you won't see any soot. I mean, it will show up as less than 0.1 on every oil sample. And again, I've got, you know, so much data to back that up because I ran that engine for so many years. And if mine ever got more soot than that, I would start looking for reasons why. That's why it seems so odd. It you can keep the soot really, really low on that engine, yet the oil turns black, and I'm not sure what does it.
Now, that DDEC 4 stock wastegated turbo is pretty tight. It's pretty restrictive, and it keeps a lot of soot or a lot of exhaust in the combustion chamber. I think if you put our manifold and turbo on and let the engine breathe, you'd see that come down. And I think John already has that, though. I have to do some research on that.
Yeah,
Wish I had more time to do more research.
Oh, yeah, I know.
The less time you have.
It seems like it. Let's head off to Kentucky. Dave, welcome to the program. You're on with Bruce Mallinson.
Hey, Kevin, thank you for taking my call. Hey, Bruce, nice to talk to you. Last night I had an issue with my thermostat gauge.
Your thermostat?
Yes, my thermostat gauge. Well, my check engine light came on, went out, came on again, went out. My thermostat gauge slowly climbed to 200 and then dropped right back to 185, where it's always fast. And now I notice that it will climb a little bit and then drop right back down to 175 and then sit right back to 185. Is that my thermostat, or could I be looking at another issue?
Oh, what engine is it and what year?
It's a 07 60 Series Detroit.
So it's a DDEC 5 EGR Detroit. Well, the sensor goes in amps or volts, and if it's off just a couple, it can give you that false reading. We just found one on a 60 series DDEC 4 new engine. The turbo boost sensor was off a couple volts, and it was holding back 6 pounds of turbo boost. So the guy thought he was making 25 when he was actually making 31. So can that happen on your coolant temp? Absolutely. Where are you, and do you ever get near Western Pennsylvania?
I live in Mass. Once in a great while, I go by on 80. I have not had a chance yet to stop at you guys. Go ahead.
Go ahead. We're about an hour and 15 minutes south of I-80. If you come down Route 8 at Barkeyville. And if you could call and give us a day or two notice, I could get you into the engineering department, and we could take a look at that to see if it's electrical. And have you tried changing the thermostat?
Not yet.
I would do the thermostat and the radiator cap first. If you're getting spikes in pressure, the radiator cap may have a bad seal and it just may be wore out. Replace the radiator cap and the thermostat. And then if the problem goes away, great. If not, you've got an electrical issue and you need to get into our shop.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Hey, Bruce, I want to run something by you, and this is pretty early on. I just saw this article the other day, but it's had me, I've just been thinking about it ever since, and this may be something that you might be able to check out before I have a chance to get to it. Remember remember Diamond Rio and Diamond Tees?
Absolutely. First camshaft I ever put in was a 335 in a Diamond Rio.
So, believe it or not, I didn't know this, but that company never really went out of business. They stopped really making, you know, trucks, but the company never went out of business, and they continued to manufacture some specialty trucks. Well, I don't know all the details, but somebody that has kept the company going and been a part of the company is now, they've got a new idea that they're working on, and what they are doing is they went out and found a cab builder. They're going to build aluminum cab trucks. And what they're going to start focusing on is building gliders, and they are going with a very, very simple design, and that's their whole point. They think trucks have gotten too complicated with all the multiplexing on the dashboard and too many electronics and too many sensors, and they think that there's a market for a simple truck. Now, they're still going to use electronic engines, but go back to the mechanical gauges, not all the multiplexing, and they're going to start building gliders. And I just thought that there may be a real opportunity there. They're actually doing this in Harrisburg. So
I think the name of the family is Osterling.
It is. Osterling, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so
that's interesting.
Yeah, one of the original family members is bringing this back, and they want to build. They're actually going to build class 6, 7, and 8 gliders. Now, it in the article that I read, they talked about doing really focusing on the vocational market, which sounds to me like they're going to build day cabs. And then I got thinking, you know, there's a real opportunity here. If they could build a really simple day cab glider, and we could get a hold of some of those. You know, think about the possibilities. A nice, simple truck, all mechanical gauges, really clean. And then we could even talk about building, because I keep saying somebody needs to build a custom sleeper. But I don't mean a custom sleeper like they build now, you know, huge and all kinds of amenities. What I mean is a custom sleeper designed with a lot of the RV technology, but smaller. So think about some of those possibilities.
I'll do one for you. You fly in here. I'm going to be driving through Harrisburg on the 25th of June. Why don't you join me?
Maybe we'll have to look at that. And you know what? We're out of time right now. The music's playing, but we're going to do this again soon. So let you and I get together. We'll talk about that. Thanks, as always, for joining me today. Hey, what's the phone number over there if people need to get a hold of you?
724-360-4080.
Great stuff. Bruce, we'll talk to you again soon. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.